Hello, this is the Love Letter Squad. I'm Teresa Ayers.
And I'm Janet Gallen, and we welcome you to another 30 minutes of a wonderful story and a love letter. And I'm going to go right to our guest, David Cates, who sees himself primarily as an agent for change. And we'll see how important this is. And I think all of us like to see ourselves as being able to affect change in this world and make it a better place. David's on the board of the Myra Theater Guild in Vallejo. And let's just go right to you and let's talk about what you want to talk about today. And we do want to talk about for a minute that you're a Jefferson Award winner. And maybe you could tell us what that was for and what that's about.
Well, a couple things that I want to talk about today. One was the Jefferson Award. I'd like to kind of back up and give you some insight on what created the activities for that award.
Good.
And one of my biggest inspirations in the love letter that I'd like to talk about today is to my father. And he recently passed 2 years ago, actually, and last Saturday was the second anniversary of his passing. And I'd like to read you his actual obituary that I wrote for him.
Oh, please do. Can I just say something?
Mm-hmm.
Can I interject something? One of the ways that we actually started this whole thing on love letters, this whole business of love letters that
we
do.
More than 4 years ago.
Yes. Was based on an obituary, which is, to me, and to Teresa, one of the most important kinds of a love letter. So go ahead. I'm so glad that you're doing this.
That's synchronistic. So it starts out, John Hubert Cates, 82, of Houston, Texas, passed away on Saturday, October 11th, 2008. He was born the first child of four children to Margaret Smith and John Hubert Cates on June 5th, 1926, in Birmingham, Alabama, and was the consummate Southern gentleman. Mm-hmm. John's family took great pride in the fact that he was their first child to attend college, graduating with a degree in electrical engineering from Auburn University. He took his degree and made a 36-year career at Dow Chemical Company as a certified professional electrical engineer, providing his wife and three children a high standard of living. John had a little-known adventurous side, which led him to the jungles of Venezuela as a surveyor to raise money to marry Helen, the woman he loved. John considered his 52-year relationship with his wife and the rearing of three beautiful children the finest accomplishment. John's altruistic nature led to the volunteering for many art organizations that gave him great joy, including president of the Men's Garden Club in Houston, a deacon and elder at the Presbyterian Church, and Little League coach. He gave freely of his time, compassion, and wisdom to his three children and passed down to them his core values of honor and ethical behavior. John Hubert Cates is survived by his immediate family, wife Helen Elizabeth Headley Cates, three children, John Headley Cates, Helen Margaret Cates, David DeWitt Cates, and his life partner Carlton, whom John considered a son.
That's lovely. And that answers the question I was going to ask when you first read, are you one of the three beautiful children, and where do you stand in line? So I see you're the youngest.
I'm middle.
Oh, middle. Oh, you read it like with your own name last, I thought. Okay.
My partner was last, and my father considered my partner of 25 years.
No, but I thought it was brother and then a sister and then you. Is that?
My brother's the oldest.
Uh-huh.
I'm the middle and my sister's youngest.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. And then my partner is also considered a son by him. So.
Mm-hmm. How long have you been together?
25 years.
Wow.
Yeah.
That is so nice. So tell us about your father. And
well, the reason I mentioned the obituary, he was an amazing man. He gave me the gift of altruism and honor, those two primary principles that are huge in my life.
Mm-hmm.
And his altruistic examples of behavior that he did in the community are examples to me that I carried forward and started here in Vallejo.
Oh, so how old were you when you knew that there was a message here from your father and
probably
how to be?
Probably at age 10, I had that modeling from a very young age where he would go out and do things for other people just spontaneously. He also treated...
Oh, so it was really by example.
It was by example, yeah. He modeled that kind of behavior.
Mm-hmm.
And then also he treated everyone with honor,
mm-hmm.
which was a big gift to me as I go forward in my life. And those kind of principles sort of led to the activities that I got involved with.
How?
That I got the Jefferson Award for.
Okay, tell us.
We started this group called the Miracle Workers, and it's at the Myra Theater Guild is the name of the organization, and the group is called Miracle Workers. It was kind of a...
Now you say we.
a group of people in the community.
Uh-huh.
The theater is
in
actually...
Vallejo.
Yeah, in Vallejo. And the theater is actually a 15,000-square-foot building that was built as a grammar school in 1918 as part of the subdivision that we live in. And it was transformed into a theater in 1947. It was in disrepair. The outside was sort of a battleship gray color, and the stucco was falling off, and it had a lot of code enforcement violations from the city of Vallejo. So we formed this group of people called the Miracle Workers. It was also full of donated items, actually to the roof in the hallways. You couldn't even get through the building.
Oh, so actual goods.
Actual, yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, it had been sort of a dumping ground for free donated items for quite some time, and they had just overwhelmed the entire organization and the building, and it became just a huge mass of donated items.
Like kind of a warehouse.
Kind of like a warehouse, yeah, for things that people didn't want, so they brought them down there.
You mean like sofas and bedsteads and things?
Sofas, we had tables, lots of chairs, we had three or four pianos.
Wow, that's big.
Yeah, it was a huge amount of things. Plus a lot of garage sale-like items like, you know, glasses and vases and that sort of stuff, and rooms just full of that. So the group of people saw that, and they said, well, how can we help the organization to improve the space that they have? And we basically didn't know anything about stuccoing. The outside is stucco. It had huge pieces that were missing. We just poked holes in the walls, went on to Google, found out how to stucco.
Well, yourselves, hands-on.
Ourselves,
hands-on.
And we met every Saturday for the entire summer, which is amazing to get a group of people together like that. We had the commitment that we had that we would show up when we wanted to show up. So you didn't come down when you didn't have the energy and you felt overwhelmed. So you took a break then. And the word that we developed for that group to describe that kind of behavior was fun and effective.
Mm-hmm.
And the word sort of combined into finective. So that was our agreement with each other, is that the activities that we were going to do down there were finective.
How many people would be in this group on typical Saturday?
Typical Saturday, probably from 10 to 15 people. And it varied, and we'd usually provide lunch, and we would work all day.
Right.
We got a 40-foot boom that we rented and painted the building because it's two stories high. And first of all, we had to repair all the stucco and then paint the outside of the building. We cleaned out the building. We took about 5 dumpster loads full of stuff out of the building, which was amazing.
This is such a good example. Talk about being, you know, a person who can affect change. That when you get a group together, look what you can do. There's no point belly aching about the way things are.
Yeah, it's very true. And Vallejo has sort of a history. I talked to you briefly about the news story of Vallejo.
Please.
There's a Vallejo story that's out there that's crime-ridden. It's never going to make it. It's poverty-ridden. It's uneducated. The people there, you know, don't really care. It's kind of this forgotten city. And the group of people that we were with, the Miracle Workers, were creating a news story about Vallejo to change that story into something that was more positive. And we basically got sick of the word potential.
Oh, good for you.
Because Vallejo, you know, everyone that comes to Vallejo goes, wow, this city has such potential.
Which means not today.
Exactly.
Uh-huh.
So, excuse me just a minute.
Yes, that's okay. So that's really a nice thing to focus on also, that, as my mother used to say, you know, tomorrow, tomorrow, tomorrow never comes. It's always a day ahead.
Exactly. And so we got sick of that word, and we decided to go ahead and put some of that potential, realize some of that potential with this particular group of people in the building. And so we had actually a great time, and it was a way for me to also work through my issues with spirituality through community.
I was going to ask about that, because you said your dad was...
Yeah, very altruistic, and I developed a community of people that were dedicated to that same ideal.
You know, that's funny, because when you say, and they came every Saturday for, what I'm thinking is, oh, instead of church, some kind of regular
practice.
Devotional something.
It was almost a practice that we got into, and it didn't cost me anything energetically. It gave me a lot energetically.
Yeah.
So I was getting a lot more out of this than I was actually putting into it, and I was there almost every Saturday. So was most of the core group of people that were there. So we were dedicated to the same vision of the building as improved and free of clutter.
So now what goes on there now, and how has that changed? What impact has that had on Vallejo?
Well, I don't know if you believe in the principles of feng shui.
Mm-hmm.
I believe strongly.
Definitely.
And I don't really know how they work. I did my house, and I had a housewarming based on feng shui.
Mm-hmm.
We cleaned out the building with the clutter. We also did some smudging to move the energy inside the building.
Mm-hmm.
And it sort of freed up the energy to come into the building, the good chi. So the transformation has been amazing. The organization itself, I'm on the board, has more money than it's had in the past 10 to 15 years.
And you're putting on performances?
We put on performances. We both sponsor them, and we also lease the building, the theater as well, to outside groups that want to come in.
Oh, how smart. What do they use it for? Theatrical presentations? Or
they use it for a host of different things. We had a couple of recent memorial services there as well. The vision that the board came up with was that it was going to be more of a community center or a community-focused performing and visual arts center.
Mm-hmm.
And the mission statement calls for developing a fund of $850,000 over 5 years, which is pretty aggressive. I think the board wanted something that was nice and juicy to focus on. And so we've had memorial services, we've had music, we've mm-hmm. had theater. We just recently closed a group called Verismo Opera, which was there and did an opera.
So this is important for our listeners to know also. That, I mean, you don't have to live in Vallejo to be able to come there to use it, right?
Correct.
Anybody can. So is there, do you want to say a website or a way of getting in touch with?
Sure.
Please feel free.
The website for the guild is the miratheaterguild.org.
MIRATHEATREGUILD.org. Okay.
Exactly. And they can go there and keep up with the events that are going on there. We have a full schedule coming up this summer and into the fall of both sponsored performances and also the leasing arrangements.
And there's parking?
Oh, plenty of parking.
Oh, that's important.
Well, plenty of parking. The building itself was a grammar school built in 1918, designed by George Kellum, who also designed the Palace Hotel here in San Francisco.
Wow. Oh, my.
The workers in Mare Island had threatened to strike. They were living in tents building ships during World War I, and they threatened to strike unless the federal government built them housing. So George Kellum came out and designed this whole subdivision in the city.
Oh.
Beautiful design. It has beautiful staircases that go in
so
between.
So that would be worth driving over just to see all this, wouldn't it?
It's very historic. And the original...
let's do that one day.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And the original Myra Theater Guild, the acronym Myra was Mare Island Recreation Association.
Oh. So
I was going to ask about that.
Its ties go back actually to the shipyard mm-hmm. to the turn of the century. So it's one of the oldest theater groups on the West Coast.
I had no idea how worth knowing
in
this
Vallejo.
Is.
Yes.
Well, you know, when talking about the reputation Vallejo has, I think it's so common for what, the 10% or the 15% or 5% of people who are just troublemakers to kind of set the color for the whole, set the tone. You know, that's the reputation can be based. And why let 5% of people take a whole community hostage
well,
in that way?
Well, and that's about changing the story is all about.
Yes.
So if you are speaking to someone, they're saying, oh, Vallejo is fill in the blank,
mm-hmm.
whatever, and they're never going to be fill in the blank, it's up to you to stop that
good for
story
you.
And say, that's not the way it is. Here's the way it is. You may not know, but it's changed quite a bit. And here's where it's going, and this is what it's about now. So... That's what the new story is about.
Now, your father saw you do a lot of this?
No, he did not, unfortunately.
Oh.
This was towards the latter part of his life, and he had Alzheimer's.
Mm.
So he was in and out.
What's the last thing he was aware of about you?
Wow, the last thing that he was aware of. I guess he didn't. He wasn't. With me during the Jefferson Award.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, he didn't live to see that. He did know that I was involved in the Myra Theater Guild.
Oh, so that he did?
Yeah, he knew about the activities, so he did know that part.
So he had a lot to be proud of you about all
he
along.
Did. He did. He was a wonderful man.
And is your mother still living?
She is, yes.
Mm-hmm.
She lives in Houston.
So who would get your love letter today?
I think...
Sometimes that's just fun to talk about, to make a decision.
Who would get it?
Mm-hmm.
I guess I would probably dedicate it to my partner.
To write him a letter.
Yes.
Okay. So let's do that.
Okay.
Now, have you ever written him a love letter?
Before, yes.
Oh, okay.
Cards, so, not necessarily letters.
Ah, so that's different. Mm-hmm. So how would you see it as different, a love letter and a card?
A card would be a little briefer, I think.
Briefer. And, I mean, we've seen some cards here that are just exceptional love letters. So length doesn't have to do with it. But as a love letter, as a tribute to someone else about the other person's wonderful qualities that make your life so good.
Mm-hmm.
You're smiling. I wish this were a TV moment. Don't I say that a lot? Okay. So
someday.
Did you take cards and then put your own sentiments in them?
Usually, yes.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
That's really nice.
Yeah. And he...
Does he have them all?
He has them all, and I have all of his. So.
There you go.
Yeah.
Okay. So somewhere, someday, these will be found.
Okay.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
I'm guessing. I mean, long after the two of you are gone.
Probably.
Somebody's going to find them in a what? Anyone tell us where they are so we'll know where to look?
Shoebox, probably.
That's right. I think that's where usually they are.
Yeah.
And maybe someone who moves in to your house or who goes through the theater's archives, or somebody's going to find that and know a lot about you and the kind of man you were and the kind of love you were able to give, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's really worth passing down over the generations.
I agree.
So what do you call him?
Carlton.
Just by his name.
Mm-hmm.
So what would you want to tell him? What would the goal of this letter be?
I think the goal would be to make a connection and tell him...
What kind?
Well, to tell him that I'm here to support him on his journey.
Which means what? And the reason I'm saying that is really not to pry, but to point up that a really good love letter is specific, so that the person receiving it... I mean, you say this is your partner, so this is somebody you're living with for 25 years.
Exactly.
So you've been there all along, right?
Mm-hmm.
So is this person going through any particular challenges that are going to need your support more in the future, or is this just life commitment?
It's life commitment. It's recommitment.
That's a really nice... Okay.
It's recommitment. We're at a point in our relationship where I think the biggest analogy or metaphor would be a snake shedding its skin.
Mm-hmm.
And our relationship has gone through that several times where both of us...
What have you come out on the other end?
A whole different world. I mean, a whole different relationship and different people. We're not the same people we were 25 years ago.
Of course. Mm.
So I guess the love that I would like to communicate to him is that we have the ability to recreate.
Mm-hmm.
And to have our relationship be whatever we want it to be.
And these are decisions that you make jointly?
Well, we evolve differently, you know, in different times and different ways and in different styles.
Mm-hmm. Is this somebody you would choose? This is really a hard question, and maybe it's not even so good to ask, but is this somebody, even though we become different people, when we look back at the people we're with, would we choose that person again?
I would.
Okay, so isn't that important to say?
Of course.
What a gift that is.
It's a big gift.
I mean, I'm not sure everybody has the joy of feeling that.
I know. They don't get the same experience.
Right.
The person may have changed in a direction that was completely different. The qualities are still there. And part of the attraction, to tie it back to my father, is a similar altruistic and sense of honor. Those two principles are very a key part of his life. So,
what do you love about him best?
I guess his strength.
Which takes form how? I mean, how does it show itself?
Emotionally,
physically.
He's also a beautiful singer.
Yeah.
And has the ability to move people with his voice. So, and I think he's probably one of those. I don't know if you know people like this, but
let's see,
who's good, really good at everything they start or do. And I don't think he's really failed at anything that he's really attempted to do. So I just find that amazing.
So he's always a success.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. What does he do for a living? I'm just curious. Now I'm just getting gossipy. Gossipy old lady.
Well, he works as a director of culinary services at a behavioral health center. Uh-huh. And he used to work with Alice Waters.
Oh.
At Chez Panisse.
Sure.
And from that came his love of food and whole food specifically. So he has worked, he's done an amazing job of taking the institutional food out of a box and converting that into actual whole food that nourishes the clients there at the Behavioral Health Center.
Gosh, how does he do that? If you don't give away trade secrets, I guess.
Well, when he first got there, he asked where the potatoes were, and the person that was in the kitchen went to the pantry and got a box off the shelf and said, here they are.
Oh, powdered stuff?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
So they're actually cooking now.
So that's a big difference. That's just not taking institutional food as it is. That's actually changing what they do.
Exactly. Well, typically institutional food is more combining than cooking.
Uh-huh.
So you're combining water with dried potatoes.
I see that.
In this particular case, he's taken that whole foods concept and moved it out and put vegetables in the weirdest places, like in burritos and stuff. And the clients love it. They don't even know they're eating vegetables. And done an amazing job on that. He's also had a really good luck, it's a good record of reducing comorbidities like... Comorbidities like diabetic sugars.
Uh-huh.
Those types of things. So a lot of the clients come in with, high blood sugars, and they feed them, or they used to feed them, a lot of sugar.
Mm-hmm.
So he's reduced that, put the vegetables in, and had the ability to have clinical outcomes on the back end that are measurable. And
so they, for example, reduce their need for insulin and that sort of thing?
Correct. Mm-hmm. Some of them are even to the point where they're not even being classified as diabetic.
So he is an actual agent for change.
He is.
Really?
Also, exactly. Yeah. I never really thought of it that way.
There are many ways to accomplish that.
You know, sometimes you just listen to people's stories and you can see the theme.
The overall.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
And he's also done it, believe it or not, for less per meal.
Oh, I bet.
Than the other campuses.
Excellent.
So he's actually reduced the food costs. So. I don't know. That's part of what he does. He just does that.
And
very passionate about it.
And what do you want to say, I would ask, in a really wonderful letter, what do you want to say is about him that's most important to you?
I guess his ability to change with me.
Uh-huh.
And have me change and keep coming back to the table in our relationship.
Because
that's a wonderful gift. A lot of people get to the point where they just don't want to do that anymore and they walk away.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Yeah.
From the relationship.
Mm-hmm.
So this is, there's you and there's Carl and there's the relationship.
Correct. Yeah.
And each of those is a unit that's important.
And is important, yes. And also changes.
Mm-hmm.
So I change, he changes, the relationship changes. And the fact that he keeps coming back to the table to reinvent, to change... I really appreciate that about him.
So how do you see yourself as different? I'm just interested. At this stage in your life than when you were a boy or a younger man?
Wow.
Because you're talking about changes, so you must have seen some in yourself.
Well, when I was younger, I had to be the superstar. You know, I was very kind of egocentric in that manner.
Mm-hmm.
Both Carlton and I started out in the ballet world. We were ballet dancers. And we got, from the age of, I started when I was 10, and we got to travel the United States and Europe.
That's really exciting.
Yeah. So we've had sort of many lives or many shedding of skin, so to speak. So.
Uh-huh.
So this is part of what gathered your interest in the theater in Vallejo?
Partly. My passion doesn't lie necessarily with community theater. It's more the community center aspect of it, where the building is used by the community. It's a place for people to come. It's also a space that's held for them to be, so that they have a place that's theirs. So that's my passion.
And so together you danced? I mean, you toured together?
We were in the same ballet company.
Oh,
that's
so
where
wonderful.
We met. We met in Cleveland, Ohio, and I was up there auditioning for the Cleveland Ballet. And I was at the audition, I saw him, I was like, who is that gorgeous man? he said he fell instantly in love with me at first
sight. Sure.
However, I didn't know if I got the job. It was an audition. So I was like, okay. And we went out to lunch. We had a great time at lunch. And then we reconnected when I did actually get the contract. And he actually told me that he told the artistic director to hire me.
Mm. He wanted to see more of you.
Yes, I think he did.
How nice.
And then we reconnected. And this was in the middle of the AIDS crisis before they had a test for the HIV virus. And Carlton is from San Francisco.
There's a whole new area of do I trust and...
Well, and his peer group was dying off.
Yes, I remember that.
Yes, lots of people, and a lot of his friends are not here anymore. Mm-hmm. Not with us. So. Mm-hmm. It was intense.
So you've over the 25 years together, you've kind of gone from dancing together in one sense to dancing together in another.
Exactly.
I mean, you're still, yes.
You're still dancing together.
And when you talk about change, you know, when you picture dancing, I mean, the change of position and the change of, and staying together through a lot of motion is a huge part of dancing. Mm-hmm. And as it turns out, a huge part of life.
Very true.
I'm so glad you mentioned all this, these other things, because it kind of makes more sense to me.
Filling in a little corners.
Yes, that's a big corner, I think.
Yeah.
Okay. So what kind of stationery will you use? I ask this sometimes because I think it makes a difference.
I think I would use a cream-colored stationery, maybe with gold borders.
Lovely. Yeah. So the issue is, I think stationery, we talk about this, Teresa and I, stationery usually either represents you or the person to whom you're sending it.
Mm-hmm.
So I bet this does both.
Probably, yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Lovely. And obviously ink and in your own handwriting, right?
My handwriting's not as good as it used to be.
Okay, that's not the same as being unreadable.
Okay.
Because in the handwriting so often lies the magic. When you see an envelope on your pile of mail, which is not what a pile of mail was 40 years ago.
Mm-hmm. True.
Right?
It's mostly email.
That's right. Or, I mean, but what you get on your pile is kind of dismal.
Mm-hmm.
So when you see somebody's handwriting, what do you...
That's exciting.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
You get a little fud?
Personal.
Yes, okay. Yeah. And will you mail it or give it or what? And I say this for the sake of listeners and because I think this is an important issue.
I don't think I would mail it. I think I would leave it to be found.
Leave it to be found. Leave is the important word, right?
Yes, uh-huh.
Because you won't be there when he reads it.
Right.
Right. Because it's private.
It is private.
Love letter is so private, and it doesn't matter that you know everything that's in it, seeing as how you wrote it, but reading it is private.
Exactly.
And also because it doesn't call, if you're there, then the other person has to respond or react.
Yeah.
And,
mm-hmm.
Right, exactly.
They don't get to have their own emotions in the moment.
Exactly, mm-hmm. And respond when that person feels. Okay, thank you so much.
Our guests are so smart.
I know.
Someday we don't even need to be here, Janet.
Yes, that's right. Every once in a while we can just turn it over. Yes, okay, that's great.
Well.
So, and whether you get something in response or not doesn't matter because it's just a gift.
Correct.
Nice. Thank you. Thank you for coming to tell us about all
You're
this.
You're welcome. It was my pleasure.
Yeah. So, thank you, and thank all of our listeners. Please join us every week at this time. We're here with Love Letters Live, guests, stories to tell, and letters to share. And as always, when we sign off, we encourage you to put your loving sentiments into words and write them down and send them as letters while you still have the chance.
Yes. And if you think you need to wait for a special occasion to write a love letter, writing a love letter is a special occasion.
Right. So, till next time, this is Teresa.
And Janet.
Saying bye-bye.
Bye.